The White House released a report this month that said, in essence, poverty in the United States has been mostly eliminated, in part thanks to a long-running federal war on poverty. It's a departure from previous Republican statements, such as those from House Speaker Paul Ryan. They've argued that the war on poverty hasn't yielded the results that were hoped for when President Lyndon Johnson made reducing poverty a priority back in 1964. The U.S. Census Bureau estimated that in 2016, more than 43 million Americans were living below the poverty line. It's nearly 13% of the U.S. population. The White House says the war on poverty is just about over. That could have a big impact on social programs like welfare and food assistance, and the impact on the poorest Americans could be significant. Our next guest is here to talk about the report, the future of social welfare programs, and poverty in Wisconsin. Tim Smeeting is the Lee Rainwater Distinguished Professor of Public Affairs and Economics at the Robert M. La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison. He was previously the director of the Institute for Research on Poverty. Tim, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. Nice to be with you.
Well, let's go back to the start of this war on poverty. When President Johnson announced it was known unofficially as the war on poverty. What was happening in the United States at that time?
Well, at that time, Robert Lampman, actually, who was a famous professor from Wisconsin, had published a fraction of American families living with incomes below $3,000 a year. And there was a lot of reaction to it, and Johnson reacted to both Lampman's work and also to books like The Other America by Michael Harrington, and we decided that we should try and help those who are least well off in our country. Now, this is, you know, a while ago, and you could still make a good living in a blue-collar job. And we had a father breadwinner, mother stayed home with kids sort of economy. And we set up a poverty measure for then. You know, it's now almost 60 years later, and things have changed. So we need to think more about what it is we're doing. In my opinion, we haven't won the war on poverty. We've made some progress, particularly because of a lot of the programs that others want to cut. But we haven't won the war at all. Walk outside in downtown Madison, look at homeless people, go out to the north side, ask people in the food pantries, ask the nonprofits, talk to anybody who works, you know, even in a church dealing with people who are least well off, a ministry for social welfare, and you will find that poverty is not gone.
I know people use different ways of measuring poverty. Can you get a sense of where we are in the country, in Wisconsin, and how it compares to, you know, when the war on poverty was kicked off?
Yes, I can. Well, every year we publish the Wisconsin Poverty Report, which is 10 years now, and we use a methodology similar to something called a supplemental poverty measure that the federal government uses. And why this is important is because it accounts for programs like our food share program and the earned income credit and the way that they affect poverty. Those are two key programs. One supports earnings. The other one puts food on the table. And without these two programs, poverty would be a lot higher. So in Wisconsin, actually, poverty is a little lower than the national average. We're doing a little bit better. We're not doing that much better. So you said something like 13% before. I think it's about 11% according to the Wisconsin Poverty Report. A little bit higher for children. And the most interesting thing, I think, in this year's Wisconsin Poverty Report was, despite, you know, our low unemployment rate and all this other huzzaing that's going on, market income poverty, which is driven by earnings, did not fall in Wisconsin. And overall poverty actually increased. So you have to ask yourself, well, how could that be in, you know, in this strong economy that we have? Well, that's an interesting question, and I can say more about it if you'd like.
Yeah, why would that be, improving economy but still this chronic poverty problem?
Well, there are still a lot of people out there working at very low wages. The Wisconsin minimum wage is $7.35, and it hasn't budged for over 10 years. People, single parents, for instance, get part-time jobs, with hours that vary all over the place. Somebody told me, well, you can get $13 an hour at any Quick Trip in Wisconsin. Well, you have to work 11 to 7 or 3 to 11 at Quick Trip to do that, and it's hard to do that raising kids and without transportation and so forth. So most poor people who are able are actually working. They're just not earning enough to get out of poverty. They get help from SNAP or food share, which helps feed their families, and they get a bonus every year from refundable tax credits because they don't earn enough to support their families. You can't support a family of three, even on a job that's $10 an hour, particularly if you can only work part-time.
Do you think that's a misconception about a lot of public assistance programs? I think the assumption might be these are people who don't have work at all. A fair amount of them, it sounds like you're saying, are people with lower-paying jobs also receiving, say, food aid or the earned income tax credit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are very few people. I mean, first of all, the idea of welfare, we wiped that out with Tommy Thompson and W-2 in the mid-1990s. We don't have people staying home getting checks anymore. There are time limits there. We don't spend anything on that program. One of the good things is we used to spend money on cash in those programs, and now we use some of it to pay for the state earned income tax credit, and we use some of it to pay for supplement our child care funds. But the child care funds aren't enough to deal with the problems we're going to face if we start trying to force more people who are on these programs to work more. So, for instance, next October, the governor plans, with a waiver from the USDA, plans to force mothers whose youngest child is of school age, in other words, supposedly they're in school some of the time, to work 30 hours a week to keep their benefits. Now, that's a lot of work, and so you have to ask, well, are there any support services? Do you have before and after school care? I mean, the idea that you drop your kid off at school in the morning at 8:30, get to work by 9, and be done by 3 and come back and pick up the baby, that just doesn't work for single parents and low-income families. It just doesn't. Their jobs are more scattered. They're more part-time. You'd at least have to have before and after school care. Then you'd have to have good child care in the summer, too. And I don't see the support services we need in terms of transportation or child care. And I certainly do not see a higher minimum wage, all of which would help make the program work.
We're talking to Tim Smeeting right now. He's a professor and poverty researcher at UW-Madison. He's with us to talk about a recent report from the White House that declared the Johnson-era war on poverty to be effectively over. But some researchers, including our guest, disagree with the claim that poverty has been mostly eradicated in the United States. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this statement, this report from the White House? What do you think it could mean for social programs like food assistance, for example? Do you think it's time to rework these programs? Is this you? Are you one of the people our guest is talking about working in a lower paid job, raising a family? What do things like the earned income tax credit, food assistance mean for you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. We continue our conversation about a recent report from the White House that said that the war on poverty is largely over and that it's time to rework social programs. Timothy Smeeting is with us, the Lee Rainwater Distinguished Professor of Public Affairs and Economics at the Robert M. La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this report from the White House? Do you see poverty in your own community, in your own backyard? What programs do you think the government should have? What do you think of the idea of work requirements for people receiving food assistance and other government help programs? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. To your calls now, Cindy is with us in Appleton. Cindy, hi.
Hello. This is just so disturbing. First of all, it's not a war, for God's sakes. And second of all, in Appleton, they did their homeless count just a couple of nights ago, their quarterly homeless count, and the numbers are the highest it's ever been. So for the government, our federal government, to say that there is poverty is have been eradicated? I mean, where, what planet are they living on? I mean, it's just so disturbing because all this is just another way for them to tell people that they need to cut, you know, these so-called entitlements. And we can give $5.2 billion tax credits to Foxconn, but we can't help our own homeless and poor people. That's just so disturbing to me. I can't even believe it.
Cindy, thanks a lot for the call. Tim, for homeless people, maybe the people in the worst situations of poverty, what kind of things could we do that we aren't doing? What kind of things are working in some places?
Well, there's some pretty good programs in Madison, actually, and it's just been taking off in Minneapolis. It's called Homes First. In other words, housing first. You give somebody a house, and then you work with them on their larger issues, which they almost all have. There are a lot of people now, especially in the summer, living in their cars with their families. That's become a new way to live, according to Governing Magazine and the National Gardeners Association. So we have problems. I mean, housing is not as expensive in Wisconsin as you'd expect, but incomes are still too low to afford it in many different places. And if you're living paycheck to paycheck and you lose a paycheck or something happens, somebody gets sick, the car breaks down, you can end up not being able to afford your rent and be evicted, and you'll end up in bad straits, as my former student, now famous, Matt Desmond, wrote in his book Evicted about Milwaukee, which has, you know, set off a whole national interest in housing for the poor and the problems of eviction and trying to prevent people from being evicted.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Melinda in Black River Falls. Melinda, hi.
Hello.
What'd you want to tell us about?
Well, I guess I'm trying to not take offense because I'm one of those single mothers that he's claiming is impossible to be able to get on their feet and can't juggle everything. I went back to school as an adult with four kids on my own, supported myself, went to work, went to school, and you have to actually want and be willing to do it. You know, I was on daycare assistance for literally 2 months, 3 months to get my certification and to be able to do my internship. Other than that, I've had to pay my way and do that way, and it's out there. There's tons of programs out there. There's tons of ways to get around and help. You have to be willing to actually put the work in to be able to motivate and to be able to get ahead.
Melinda, thanks for the call. Tim, Melinda saying she can do it. Other people can do it, too.
God bless you, Melinda. I'm glad you were able to do it. Others aren't quite so lucky. Now, please get me right here. The answer to poverty is a good job that pays enough to support your family. Getting a degree or getting a certification in as a medical technician, for instance, and getting a good job in that field is exactly where we need to go. But it's harder for some people to get there than for others. And that's my problem. A lot of people have good family support while they're doing it. Belinda, who was watching your four kids while you're off at school and trying to do all that other stuff? You had I'm hoping that you had some sort of support to do it.
Melinda dropped off the line there. Sorry.
Well, I'm sorry. I mean, I applaud Melinda. People can do it, and people have done it, and people are doing it every day. But sometimes it's harder if you're stuck in downtown Milwaukee and the jobs are all out in the periphery and you don't have a car that's reliable, or you don't have reliable child care, or you did not do well in high school and didn't graduate from high school. Let's say you had your first child early on before you finished schooling. Well, then it's really hard to find a job that pays enough and to catch on. Your resume doesn't look very good. You don't have good work support and so forth. Now, we'd like to figure out what we could do to help those people, to help them get more education and training. We like employers who are willing to stand up and say, I need workers, I'll give this person a chance, and help them get to work and give them the child care and so forth. If we do that, I think we can solve the problem. But just pushing them off without any help, sending them to a class to learn how to put together a resume for 2 weeks, has been shown to be ineffective. The thing about it, and this is what really frosts me right now, is the governor vetoed any attempt to evaluate what we do next year. So in other words, we're going to do this program. A few people will rise above and get lucky and find jobs and put it together and make it, and a whole lot more won't. But we're not going to keep any data on that. We're not going to keep do any evaluation of how well the program worked and what happened to the people who succeeded in the program and those who failed in the program. That's ridiculous. All public policy, all government, you need to evaluate what it is you're doing. You need to be able with a straight face to say whether this thing worked or not. What happened? How many people earned their way off the program? How many people got jobs but still needed food share? How many people got dropped from the rolls because they couldn't find 30 hours a week of work? Those are important questions, and we need to know that. And to veto a bill that would evaluate that is ridiculous. But it's been vetoed last time. There's another chance this year to pass the bill to evaluate what's going on with these workfare efforts of ours. How much does it cost? How many people do we get into good, well-paying jobs? How many people fall by the wayside and lose, you know, the ability to feed their families? Those are questions that everyone ought to know. They should be answered. And so far, there's been no attempt to figure out how to answer it.
Melinda, thanks for sharing your story at 800-642-1234, talking about poverty in Wisconsin and around the country. We have Tim Smeeting with us from UW-Madison. Back to your calls. Mary is on the line in Pewaukee. Mary, hi.
Oh, hi. Yes. Well, thank you and your guests for the show. I hate to assume anything, but I believe that the last caller, you know, good for her, but I believe she was probably white. At least she sounded so. I don't think some people realize the difference when you are of color, which I am not. We have white privilege. The same situation for one family and as a white privileged woman, and I get it too. A woman also is a minority, but life is different. So that's all, the only point I wanted to make on that. And great for her. Some people can pull themselves up by their bootstraps, but some people don't even have the boots.
Mary, thanks for the call. Tim, can you talk about the racial breakdown of poverty in Wisconsin?
Very, very well said. Very well said. Race is certainly a matter. The black unemployment rate in our state is 9%, even if the overall one is just under 3%. Race matters. The only area in the only county in our state which had a poverty rate which is significantly above the state average was Milwaukee County. And if you go inside Milwaukee County, you can find poverty rates, even after all these programs, of 40 and 50% in the very black middle of the city, and poverty rates of 3, 4% in Whitefish Bay, Cedarburg, Brown Deer, in the same county. You don't have to go to Waukesha. You don't have to even go to Washington, Ozaukee, or Jefferson. It's right there. So race is a big issue. And in this fall, Poverty Matters will be held in September 26th and 7th, I think, in Milwaukee. And I'll have a new addendum to the Wisconsin Poverty Report that focuses explicitly on the role of race in poverty in our state. Race and ethnicity, we'll be looking at Latinos, too. This will be the first time we've done that. But it's clear that's where the real problem is. We need to find ways to help African-American families with kids in Milwaukee find jobs and have a fair chance. We need to find a way to take those who've done their job, paid their debt to society, who've been incarcerated, and are black. By the way, our African-American male incarceration rate in our state is the second highest in the country. Okay, so we have a serious issue there. We need to get people out of the prison cycle, prison off, back again, into jobs, and into a chance to grow and move ahead. Now, there are people trying to do that in Madison, like Johnny Hunter, who runs Underground Butcher. He and others have started a bakery and training and food services to help those who were formerly incarcerated break the cycle of crime and get a decent job and God bless them. We need more and more and more efforts like that. And do you know that the probability of an African-American man with less than a high school education, by age 30, about 65% of them have been incarcerated. So you have some tie-up with the law, which means some mark on your record and something that puts you at the bottom of all the hiring queues and so forth. And We have to work directly on the problem of race and poverty, especially in Milwaukee, but in the rest of the state, too.
Time for one more quick call. Teresa is with us in Delavan. Teresa, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I know you have a few minutes, but I want to applaud the lady that just called and admitted to being privileged. It's a lot of privileged people that does not admit that, so I commend her. But I am African-American, calling from Delavan, and I raised my son, and I did it, but I had help. Unfortunately, a lot of blacks in society today does not have the help that I have had from my family, and it falls under poverty and socioeconomic statuses. So thanks for bringing this whole thing up. I wish I had more time to talk.
Teresa, thanks for calling, and Teresa will have the last word. And Tim, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Robin, and thank the callers. I think it was a very good set of callers with really good questions and points to make, and I really enjoyed it. So thank you.
Thank you. That's Tim Smeeting, Lee Rainwater Distinguished Professor of Public Affairs and Economics at the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison. He joins us today to talk about a recent report from the White House declaring the effective end of the war on poverty. Coming up Monday here on Central Time, we start our series of interviews with candidates in the primary campaign for governor of Wisconsin. A guest tells us why we're seeing so many wildfires in the western United States this year. And the author of the book Respecting Animals says we need to rethink our relationship with animals in the wild, as pets, and in our food system. That and look at some of the top news stories of the day. It's all coming up Monday here on Central Time.